AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
If you're an RIA, Schwab Advisor Services is the Watson to your homes. Smart, dependable, always has your back. With all the wealth services, technology, and support your firm needs, the difference is so obvious, it's Schwabvious. Follow the clues at schwabvious.com.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are live on Football Full Circle. It is FFC, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. And Scott, week number 5 of the National Football League regular season now officially in the books. It came to a close on Monday night in Las Vegas between the Raiders and the Packers. And Scott, I don't know exactly what you take away from Monday night. My main takeaway was both of these teams are pretty average to mediocre, maybe even below average. If both win 7 or 8 games, kudos, but that's probably the maximum we're going to see out of these teams this year. The Raiders get their second win of the season. They improve to 2-3. The Packers pick up their third loss of the year. They fall to 2-3 as Las Vegas wins at home, Scott, 17-13, covering as a short 2.5-point favorite.
Yeah, I tell you, my biggest take out of it all, there's a couple, but the biggest one for me, Ben, is, boy, what has happened to Jordan Love? I mean, the first few games this year, you know, there were some issues, but he showed a lot of talent, could throw the football, and, you know, as a consensus, most people watching said, okay, you know what, Packers got their quarterback for the next 10 years, but yeah. What we've seen out of him over the last 2 weeks is just a head-scratcher. It's like last night's game. Oh, yeah, he couldn't throw the 3 interceptions, each one worse than the other. They didn't want to throw the ball at all. It was a weird game. I thought they would come out throwing without Aaron Jones, and they did just the opposite. They had a chance to win, but Love wasn't any good last night.
Yeah, completely agree, Scott. I think that is the overall takeaway from the individual, because last night's game didn't have that key or critical juncture that swung the game and that we react to on a week-to-week basis like we often do with any given NFL game. And I'm not sure it really is all that important for either of the teams this year. Organizationally, though, Scott, I think you bring up a great point with Jordan Love. We'll talk about that in just a moment. First, we welcome in our Sirius XM Channel 159 audience. 159 on Sirius XM is the home for Sports Grid Radio on Sirius XM. He's Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. This is Football Full Circle. And Scott, Jordan Love last night, 16 of 30, 182 yards only, 0 touchdown tosses, and threw 3 interceptions. 3 terrible interceptions as well. And Scott, you're spot on. The Packers started off this year 1-1, but through those first 2 games, Jordan Love had thrown 6 touchdowns to 0 interceptions. He is one of 4 quarterbacks, Scott, in the last decade to start off a season with at least 3 touchdown passes and not a single pick in his first 2 games, along the lines of Patrick Mahomes twice, Peyton Manning, and Tom Brady. That was the rarefied air that Jordan Love found himself in the opening 2 games of this new era in Green Bay. And you're right, Scott, the overall assessment and takeaway at that moment was, oh my God, the Packers are about to have another decade of consistency at the quarterback position. How lucky is this fan base? How lucky is this franchise to have 31 straight years of Brett Favre into Aaron Rodgers in all the success they saw at the quarterback spot? And here we are just going to run it back again in a new era with Jordan Love. And now, Scott, after 5 games, and Jordan Love has greatly struggled the last 3, 2 touchdowns to 6 interceptions in the last 3 outings for Green Bay, the conversation is, oh, the Packers are about to find out what it's like to have mediocre quarterback play.
Yeah, it's really weird, right? Couple balls bounce the right way against Atlanta. They win that game. Instead, they lose by one. But they could very easily be 3-0, right? And then just cruising, yep, as you're saying. And then these last 2 weeks, and last night in particular, it's just like, I don't know if there's an injury that they're not telling us or that there's something else behind the scenes, but this is not the same guy we saw those first couple of weeks. He just, last night was just, it was almost like he was pulling teeth to get Green Bay to throw the football, and I'm getting more and more frustrated because I got Jordan Love and Davante Adams needing 25 points to win my fantasy, which you would have thought would have been an easy thing to do, but I ended up losing. But then every time he did throw the football, he was throwing an interception or he was getting sacked. So it's kind of like, all right, I guess I really can't blame the Packers for their game plan. But yeah, something's not right in Green Bay. Something.
Yeah. I mean, I think a critical component of it, Scott, offensively, is the absence of Aaron Jones. But one guy shouldn't mean everything, especially at the running back position, although, of course, a versatile receiver out of the backfield. One guy shouldn't dictate the overall success of your team. If so, something is broken in the system, not with that individual, for them to rely so heavily on just one key contributor. And, Scott, when you look at the rest of the stats for Green Bay last night, A.J. Dillon was actually pretty good against this Las Vegas defense. The Vegas defense was okay, leading the way for the Raiders. Jimmy Garoppolo was okay, 22 of 31 for 208 yards, albeit under his passing yards prop of 229 and a hook. Josh Jacobs, Scott, who we thought would maybe right the ship, the NFL's leading rusher last year, more than 1,600 yards on the ground, wasn't all that great against Green Bay. The ground game really hasn't done much for Las Vegas. 20 carries last night for 69 yards for Josh Jacobs. When you look over all this year, Scott, for the guy that led the NFL in rushing yards last year, he hasn't broken past 70 yards yet so far in the first five for Las Vegas. And the Packers entered last night with the second worst rushing defense in the NFL, giving up more than .155 per game on the ground. You would have thought the scenario was ripe as they try to keep the game moving. They established the run. Didn't really happen, and yet the Packers kind of lifeless, Scott, and lost by four. It's not like the Raiders blew them out and were like, oh, that was a dominant performance from Las Vegas. Maybe it's a team that could potentially contend for a wild card spot in the AFC. I think you look at both of these teams, Scott, and you say, all right, cool, like, we'll talk to you again in 2024. Maybe go have fun and get your 6 or 7 wins this year.
Yeah. What a strange game last night, statistically and everything else. You know, you're right. They both tried to run the ball. Davante Adams only had 4 receptions, and 3 came on one drive. And he only had 4 targets. So it's not like they were throwing him 10 times and he just wasn't making receptions. How do you only have 4 targets for him? And that's the strangest thing I've ever seen. And again, 3 on one drive. And then you got Josh McDaniels at the end of the game that we could talk more after the break. What were you doing kicking a field goal there with 1:50 and change left? You're only up 4. That's only going to put you up 7. Even if you got the 50-yarder, you're going to be giving the ball back to Packers with nearly 2 minutes left and only down a touchdown. When it's 4th-and-1 and you do have Josh Jacobs and you have handed in the ball 20 times, I mean, these head coaches, Ben, they really are not smart. I'll keep it nice. They are not smart when it comes to game management situations. They really aren't. It's wild.
4th-and-2 at Green Bay's 34-yard line. They pick up the first down. The game is virtually over. And instead, Josh McDaniels, that has shown his propensity, Scott, by the way, for the field goal this year in the 2 primetime games Las Vegas has been featured in, he loves those 3 points if he can get them either which way, when he's trailing by more than a touchdown, or in this instance, to put his team up by a touchdown when Green Bay still would have needed a touchdown to beat him. But then Jordan Love bailed him out with his 3rd interception of the game. Yeah, Scott, we'll continue talking about these 2 teams just a little bit before we get into the rest of the news around the National Football League moving forward. Because, Scott, I think last night also representative of what we're going to see in both of the divisions, Las Vegas and Green Bay playing. The AFC West, where it stands after 5 weeks, and the NFC North, where it stands after 5 weeks as well. Plenty more to get to here on Football Full Circle up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are back live right here on FFC. So our reaction to Monday Night Football, the finale of week number 5. The Raiders get the win, Scott, by 4, 17-13 over Green Bay. They cover as a 2.5-point home favorite, only their second game so far this year as a favorite. They lost the opening one on Sunday night against the Pittsburgh Steelers in the desert. They get the win on Monday night to end out week number 5. A total of 45 stays well under. It was an under all game long. So the Raiders got her now 2-3. I don't really know what the optimism is so much for Las Vegas. Their updated win total after the first 5 weeks of this year is now 7.5. Okay, the win total up by a full win from where it was in the preseason, but the under still heavily juiced at minus 150. You're expected to be a 7-10 football team. Scott, if the Raiders are around that margin, knowing Josh McDaniels and his relative lack of success as a head coach and some of the questionable decisions he's already made so far this year, do you think the seat gets warm at all in Las Vegas for McDaniels moving forward?
Yeah, but the only thing I would say to that, Ben, is that the situation really hasn't changed much from last year when people were talking about him getting fired after 1 year. It was that bad last season, right? And it always came back to, the Davis family's not exactly the richest in the world anymore and this, that, what have you. And they don't have the money to be spending. They're already paying John Gruden still. So the answer was like, no, he's not getting fired after 1 year. It might be the same situation. He's got a 5-year contract. Seemingly he should get at least 2-3 years, right, before you implode, you give the guy a fair chance. But if he's so bad, you bring Jimmy G in for a couple of seasons and it doesn't happen, I could see it under normal circumstances. But just remember hearing those stories last year, I don't think so. I think he'll get at least a third year.
Yeah, Mark Davis is the owner, of course, in Las Vegas. I don't necessarily know if he's going to make any move out of having Josh McDaniels as his head coach. We'll see exactly what happens for Josh McDaniels moving forward. But again, I don't think the optimism is very high for Las Vegas. Still a plus 430 price for the Raiders to see the AFC postseason. I just don't really believe it's going to happen. And nothing I saw last night, Scott, despite a win and a cover as a favorite, really changes my mind. Scott, I talked about the divisional impact of these games, right? You look at the AFC West now. After 5 weeks, the Chiefs sit atop the division once again, 4-1. The Broncos are 1-4 in the cellar. They play each other to start week number 6 on Thursday Night Football in Arrowhead. Travis Kelce or not, the Chiefs are a 10.5-point favorite against the Denver Broncos, who right now are one of, if not the worst football teams in the National Football League. The Raiders are 2-3. And the Chargers, Scott, who had a bye week number 5, good for Justin Herbert to rest up with the fractured finger in his left non-throwing hand. They're 2-2 and don't look like they're really going to be a double-digit win football team this year. So here we are once again, Scott, where the Chiefs have won the division for 7 consecutive seasons. The Chiefs don't even look like the best version of themselves so far, and they're a minus 320 favorite to make it 8 consecutive divisional crowns within the AFC West.
Yeah, it really is amazing, right? I mean, every year, especially last year when they lost Ty Hill, and even this year, I said the same thing. I didn't think this team was going to be that good. Their wide receiving core is not great. Kelce's getting a little older, blah, 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 right? And here they are, in a position to make a stranglehold. They'll win, right? Are they going to lose to Denver? They've beaten, 16 straight times? So right. If they were ever going to lose, they're not going to lose to this Denver Bronco team. So they're in a position to just stranglehold the division again for the umpteenth time. It's amazing. Amazing. How about this parlay, Ben? I won't include Kansas City because the Chargers are 2-2 and they play KC, and they generally play KC twice, or tough, rather. But how is this parlay not going to lose? Detroit to win the NFC North, Philadelphia to win the NFC East, and San Fran to win the NFC West. That's a parlay that pays plus money, plus 112. And again, not even including Kansas City. I don't know how that one loses. With Green Bay losing last night, that division is there. I mean, the Lions are going to win that division. Believe it or not, that's why they were favorites, I guess, in the offseason, right? Niners are winning the West. Philadelphia, with Dallas, after what we watched Sunday night. Are you ready to say Dallas is going to beat Philadelphia for the division? Down 2 games already? That's a great parlay.
Yeah, I completely agree, right? Every one of those teams got that you mentioned at least a $2.50 favorite with a minus in front of their price. And the only thing that would cause me a little bit of caution would be the NFC East, just knowing that nobody has gone back-to-back in the division since 2004. And I do believe the Cowboys will be a double-digit win team, Scott. But with the Eagles off to their second consecutive 5-0 unbeaten start, the first time that has happened for Philly, by the way, in franchise history, it might not matter if Dallas wins 11 games. Philadelphia might already have built up too big of an advantage. So I would agree with you. And again, that doesn't include the Chiefs. And Scott, you're right. The Chiefs have beaten the Broncos 15 consecutive times. The Chiefs have dominated every divisional opponent. Justin Herbert and the Chargers have never beaten the Chiefs since he was named the starting quarterback. It's part of the reason, of course, Kansas City has won 7 consecutive divisional crowns. And Scott, I'm glad you bring up the NFC North, because the Lions were the favorites entering this year, but it wasn't a minus money price. It wasn't even all that close to even money. It was plus 145, about 70 cents in front of the Green Bay Packers and the Minnesota Vikings. Actually, the gap might have been a little bit more, but again, the Lions weren't necessarily a home run winner of this division. Now, after 5 weeks, the Lions are the only team with a 500 record or better. Detroit is 4-1. Might actually be undefeated if they had just held on against the Seahawks, but still 4-1. The Green Bay Packers, Scott, are 2-3. They have a 5-1 price to win the NFC North. The Vikings are 1-4, and the Bears are 1-4. And although Chicago got the win to start off week number 5, I'm not sure there's a ton of optimism that Chicago is going to rattle off 11 of their next 13 games to be a true divisional contender. The Packers look lifeless, and the Vikings, Scott, take a big hit on this Tuesday morning as well. We got the report very early on this Tuesday. The Vikings are placing Justin Jefferson on IR, meaning he is going to miss at least the next 4 weeks. Of course, Justin Jefferson left the game against the Chiefs this past Sunday early with a hamstring injury. Scott, he's going to be on the sideline for at least the next month for Minnesota, a 1-4 team that has lost all 5 of their games, or has played all 5 of their games in a single score game. They have lost 4 of those 5 after last year being 11-0. I can't necessarily say the tides are all that optimistic in the Twin Cities.
No, you know, and now you got to talk about the trade deadline, right? You know, yeah. Kirk Cousins, last year of his contract, trade deadline is the end of this month, Halloween. They're 1-4. Their schedule is, you know, good news, bad news for the Vikings. I'll give you the bad news. The bad news is they have 3 of the next 4 on the road, and their one home game is against San Francisco. So they're staring down the barrel of a 1-8 start. The good news is those road games are all winnable at Chicago, at Green Bay, at Atlanta. So you play a month without Justin Jefferson. You had 3 games before the trade deadline, Sunday, October 29th. So you got Chicago and Green Bay on the road, San Fran, and then you got to make your decision about Kirk Cousins. Right? You know, if they go 2-1, they, you know, they got 3 wins. Are they realistically in it? You know, maybe. Kind of to me, Ben, it all depends on what they want to do with Kirk Cousins at the end of the year. If they want to re-sign him, then you keep him, obviously. If you know, okay, you know, at the end of the year, we're not giving this guy another $45 million, and that's what it's going to cost. Some team is going to pay Kirk Cousins $40, $45 million, right? If Danny Dimes, yep. Danny Nichols, as I like to call him, got that with the Giants, someone's going to definitely do that, you know, maybe even $50 million. So if the Vikings say no to that, then I would trade him, get something for him.
Yep. Yep. I mean, I would agree, Scott. I would. And I don't know necessarily where Minnesota goes from here. Scott, we said it multiple times throughout our conversations on the Vikings and the NFC North in the offseason. The Vikes were expected to regress. They were a 13-win football team, 11 of those wins in a single-score football game with a win total this year of 8.5. A team that won the division with 13 wins had a win total of 8.5. Obviously, that luck variable was expected to switch on Minnesota. It has, Scott, but in a more drastic way than I think even the most pessimistic odds maker on Minnesota expected at this point, and another bit of bad luck with Justin Jefferson being placed on injured reserve. We'll continue our conversation next here on FFC.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are back live right here on Football Full Circle. So, Scott, one point I think we should stress in the NFC North is the fact the 4-1 Detroit Lions are now greater than a $3 odds on favorite to win the NFC North. The Lions have failed to win a divisional crown within the National Football League in three decades since 1993. The Lions now, Scott, after a month and a week, are a $3 favorite, greater than that, minus 320 to win a divisional title. We said it all offseason long, Scott. Would the optimism and the excitement around Detroit actually match up with the results that we saw? We said it after week number one. The upset, of course, over the reigning Super Bowl champion Chiefs in Arrowhead, booked as an underdog. Detroit's expectation was not going to be that plucky underdog that continued to pull upsets, but a favorite being a divisional favorite on a week-to-week basis, being booked as the favorite, expected to win games. And so far, Scott, the results have been proven by Detroit. And given where everybody else is in the NFC North, in a division that has been a disaster outside of Detroit, the Lions' odds and path to a divisional title for the first time since 1993 looks pretty clear at the moment.
It's amazing, right? We got two like great trends or just things that have happened over the course of history or that haven't happened, right? Like the NFC East back-to-back champs and then the Detroit Lions not win the division. And yet both, it's tough to make a case that both won't actually happen this year. I mean, you look at the Lions, it is really a two-way street there. It's not only pro-Lions in the NFC North, it's anti-everybody else. I mean, and especially now with Jefferson out from Minnesota, you know, I thought the Vikings would be better. They're going to regress, and I know everyone pointed to that one score record. All games in the NFL are decided by one score for the most part. They really are.
Yeah.
So I didn't put too much credence into that, but here they are at 1-4 going in the wrong direction. The Bears, they're not going to make a run, and what we saw at Green Bay these last couple of weeks, I don't know how the Lions don't win the division, to tell you the truth, outside of some crazy injuries. So I think that's going to happen, and I think Philadelphia's going to win the NFC East. I think both are going to happen for the first time in Zions.
Listen, the Birds have built up a big enough advantage already, being a perfect 5-0 over Dallas at 3-2, that you would expect them to be there. If the Eagles maintain that advantage over the Cowboys and they can split their two divisional matchups against Dallas, then boom, Philadelphia has a great path as well to go back-to-back in the NFC East. And by the way, the last team to go back-to-back was this Eagles franchise, winning four straight divisional crowns from 2001 to 2004. And Scott, for the Lions, it's not just winning a division. It's not just reaching the postseason. It's capitalizing on that playoff opportunity. The Lions have made the playoffs twice in the last decade, but not since 2016. That's 7 years ago now. They have not won a playoff game, Scott, since 1991. That is more than 30 years ago. They have been to the postseason in that span eight different times. They are 0-8 since 1991. They have the opportunity now, Scott, to just given the odds, right? A lot of football left to play. There are 12 more games for Detroit and everybody else in the NFC North. We understand what we are saying. Just given the odds, Detroit being a minus 320 favorite to win the NFC North divisional crown at this moment, there is a realistic possibility, Scott Wetzel, the Detroit Lions are going to host a playoff game come the middle of January at Ford Field in the Motor City. The environment is going to be electric, and if you were to think about it at this moment, given the other team, Scott, that would potentially be in the NFC wild card, the Cowboys probably the best other team, maybe a couple from the NFC West and the Seahawks and the Rams. The NFC South's not bad. Three teams with a winning record at this moment. But the Lions, more than likely, Scott, unless they drew Dallas in a 3-6 game or a 4-5 game, would probably be the favored side in their home stadium to win a playoff game for the first time since 1991. That is how this season is already trending for Detroit. Again, we've only played 5 weeks. We understand that, but that is how this season is going for Detroit. It's been a resounding success so far.
And I tell you, Ben, when you look at their schedule, now it's not over the top easy, but it's also not difficult. You know, you could make the case Detroit's in a position to not only host one, but host two playoff games, yep, depending on how the seedings all plan out. You know, but you have to win the games that you're supposed to win. And I think this week is as normal as a Detroit Lions at Tampa Bay game is.
Yeah.
This, it's kind of like a, all right, are the Lions going to lose? Then they play at Baltimore next week, and all of a sudden they're looking at 4-3, and they're, you know, back to being the Lions. Or do you win? You go to 5-1. All right, maybe you lose to Baltimore on the road. No shame in that. You're 5-2. Then you come home, and you got the Raiders on your schedule. You got the Bears on the schedule twice. You got the Vikings on the schedule. You got Green Bay at home on the schedule. New Orleans on the road will be difficult. Chargers on the road, but nothing daunting. There's no Kansas City on there anymore, although they won in Kansas City. But it's a pretty decent schedule to, you know, maybe get 12 wins, 13 wins, and be the second seed behind Philadelphia or San Fran, depending on how things pan out.
Yeah, and Scott, you're not wrong, right? You look at, so we were doing this on the early line today because we were kind of making fun of the Giants being in a primetime game once again, New York in Buffalo, in Western New York, to take on the Bills. It's Sunday Night Football, week number 6. The Bills are a 2-touchdown favorite. We're not sure Daniel Jones is going to play. We don't know about the status of Saquon Barkley. Does it even matter if both were fully healthy? Because they would have no time to do anything with the football behind that incredibly roughed up and banged up offensive line for the G-men. And we were looking up and down the slate, Scott, and we're thinking to ourselves, okay, if we could flex out week number 6, Sunday Night Football game, what game would we put in there? And at least on paper, right, there's not that other marquee matchup. Like 2 weeks ago, Scott, although the Jets kept it more competitive against the Chiefs on Sunday night than we expected, the clear marquee matchup of the weekend was Buffalo and Miami in Buffalo, although it was in the early window. Is there a game, America's game of the week, something in the afternoon slot that could be Sunday Night Football just as easily? You look up and down the slate for Sunday, there's nothing that jumps off the page as that other marquee matchup. But Scott, you said what I actually think might be Sunday Night Football, the Lions and the Buccaneers. Two teams that only have one loss this year, Detroit 4-1, Baker and the Bucs off the bye, a 3-1 mark to start. Two teams that sit in first in their respective divisions, with Detroit only being a 3-point favorite on the road in Tampa. Scott, that actually might be the best game of the Sunday slate.
It's the only game outside of Colts and Jaguars, and no offense to the Jaguars and the Colts, but I don't think anyone's going out of their way to watch that. It's the only game this week, Ben, in which both teams are over 500. So, that's it. I mean, it really, kind of both teams are in the same position, as I mentioned with Detroit. You know, we're concentrating on them, but if you're a Tampa Bay fan, it's the same thing. You want to be a playoff team, you want to challenge New Orleans for that division, you got to win this game, right? You're at home.
Yep.
You just have to at 3-1. But, yeah, who would have thought? And you look at those 4 o'clock games this week. Now, this is the second week in a row. Patriots, Raiders. Oh. Cardinals, Rams. Man.
Oh.
Eagles, Jets, I guess, because it's New York and Philadelphia. And there's going to be a ton of Eagle fans at the Meadowlands. And, you know, I guess that's not too bad because the Jets won, but they're still just 2-3. It's Lions and Buccaneers at 4:25. You know, who would have thought that would have been the marquee game this week?
Yeah, no doubt about it. And the Bucs right now, Scott, despite the best record in the NFC South, still the third best price at 2-1. The Panthers are the remaining winless team around the National Football League at 0-5. Scott, the Saints and the Falcons, both north of 500, 3-2 so far this year. You can't say that either has looked all that great on their way to an above 500 record, but the Saints did shut out the Patriots on Sunday in Foxborough. Again, I think that's more about Mac Jones and the disaster that New England is. And the Falcons did come back to knock off the Houston Texans. But, you know, Scott, as I look around this division, at least right now, Baker Mayfield's playing a great level of football. We've seen Baker be great in spurts throughout his career, and then there might be a drop-off. You hope that's not the case for Tampa this year, but a 2-1 price for the Bucs might make some sense. The Saints are the favorites, plus 155. The Falcons not all that far behind, just 30 cents back at plus 185. Another good game, Scott, on Sunday. Seattle and Cincinnati. A game game where you look at both of these teams, right? Seattle fresh off the bye as well. A team that is 3-1 this year. They dropped the opener. They've won three straight. They haven't looked half bad in doing so. And what exactly are the Bengals going to show us, Scott? It was a 2.5-point spread, now up to 3 in favor of Cincinnati. Scott, I've said this a few times. The Bengals started off each of the past 2 years 0-2. Last year in 2022, they won two consecutive games, 3-4, to get back to 2-2, so it didn't look as bad before losing week number 5. This year, Scott, it was almost a disaster because they won week 3, they lost week 4, they got hammered week 4 on the road in Nashville by the Titans, 27-3. Everybody's like, oh, the Bengals are done. Joe Burrow's not healthy. Jamar Chase doesn't seem happy with how he's being used in the offensive scheme. Then they come out on Sunday, Scott, in the desert, only a 3-point road favorite, and they win by 2 touchdowns. Now at 2-3 once again. Last year, Scott, they won 11 of their 12 final games of the year, including 8 straight to end it. That's a very tall order to do in the National Football League, but there's a team that's comfortable in this spot, Scott, and it's Cincinnati. I look forward to that game on Sunday in the early window in Cincy as well.
Yeah, that should be a good one, right? Cincy only 2-3, so they didn't fall into that both teams with winning records category. Really, I won't say must, but it's a huge, huge game. As much as it was last week in Arizona, it's just as much, I think, this week against Seattle because they have a bye next week. Then they run a gauntlet of at San Fran, Buffalo, Houston at home, okay, and then at Baltimore. That's, you know, they're good enough where they're capable of winning those games. You know, it's not like other teams, but you got to figure they're going to stumble somewhere along the line. But I'm surprised, Ben, Cincinnati's only a 3-point favorite again. I thought that would be a little bit more after last week.
The last 3 weeks, Scott, I've said the same thing for the Bengals. I'm surprised by this spread. We could look back at the end of this year and think it was not nearly enough in favor of Cincy. 2.5 on the road in Nashville. Boy, was I wrong about that. It should have been 14.5 points laying for Tennessee. Last week, only a 3-point spread as well. More on Football Full Circle next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on FFC. It's Football Full Circle, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network. So, Scott, some news and notes around the National Football League. And IR is not a term you want to hear entering week number 6. We share Justin Jefferson has been placed on the injured reserve by Minnesota. 571 receiving yards this year, Scott, despite not doing much because he exited the game early against Kansas City. So the 5th most receiving yards in the National Football League for Justin Jefferson. So as that stands now, Scott, he's going to be on the sideline for some time. You talked about what it means overall for Minnesota. Sorry, the 3rd most receiving yards, 571 for Justin Jefferson. But that doesn't seem as though it's going to be great for the Vikings moving forward. Scott, the 2nd leading rusher in the NFL is a rookie in Miami, Devon Achane, out of Texas A&M. He has been one of the most explosive offensive players in the National Football League this year, Scott. He had 151 yards against the Giants on Sunday in South Florida on only 11 carries. He had 18 carries for 203 against the Broncos in that 70-piece performance Miami put up a couple of Sundays ago. He had only 8 carries, Scott, against Buffalo for 101 yards. He's averaging more than 12 yards per pop this year, but dealing with a knee issue, Scott, and according to Adam Schefter of ESPN, he's likely to be placed on the IR. That would be a blow for this Dolphins offense. Not that there's not enough talent elsewhere for Miami to recuperate some of what Achane has brought this year, but truly a huge offensive piece as a part of that output so far for Mike McDaniel and Miami.
Yeah, makes you wonder what took him so long to get him into the starting lineup, or at least to have him get some carries, right? Man, he is as fast can be. That's a big blow for the Dolphins. You're right. They have so many others, and most of them will come back. Jeff Wilson Jr. is set to come off the IR. Kind of convenient how that works itself out, right? One guy on, one guy off. So, you know, it's going to take a dip. It won't take a huge, huge dip, but he's a big part of that offense. He's explosive. So I wouldn't know if I would necessarily not bet Miami because of that, but that's a big blow. Kind of like a who's who of, you know, the IR list this week in the NFL. You know, we mentioned, you know, you got Justin Jefferson, you got Achan, James Conner, running back for Arizona, the Cardinals. You know, he's got a knee injury now, and he's a big part of that offense. Van Der Esch on defense with the Dallas Cowboys might miss a few games with a neck strain. So you got some big names hitting that waiver wire. That's why, you know, outside of Van Der Esch, it's tough, Ben, to really bet these futures in the NFL with the over-unders on the yards passing or running or receiving, because these guys are just getting hurt. You know, if you're sitting on overs on Jefferson, you're looking great. You know, same thing with Connor. You're looking golden, and now all of a sudden you have this wrinkle thrown your way. Same thing with Kirk Cousins a little bit, to the fact that he's not going to have Jefferson to throw to anymore, so you know his numbers are going to go down. So football's tough with those things. They're great, but they are tough because of that injury factor.
Yeah, 100%, Scott. I mean, when you look at Justin Jefferson's game log this year, you might hit the over on his receiving yards season-long prop by week 8 if he was healthy. Yeah. He had almost 150 yards in the first 3 games, each of them this year. I say almost because he finished 1 yard shy week 3 against the Chargers, 149. Scott, if he had one more receiving yard against L.A., he would have been the first player in NFL history to have 150 or more in all 3 of the first games to start off a season. And then it was a disastrous week number 4 that they got their first win. He had 2 touchdowns, his second and third touchdown of the year, and he had 85 yards. And you're like, what is wrong with Justin Jefferson? He didn't get at least to the century mark. And then again, left the game early on Sunday against Kansas City. 3 grabs, 6 targets, 28 yards. Now, Scott, I don't like to delve too much into this discussion, but it is noteworthy, of course, right? There's been a ton of conversation the last few years. A hot button topic has been turf fields versus grass fields in the National Football League. And I asked pro football doc Dr. David Chow yesterday on the early line, Scott, because we saw Jay Jett go down, and of course Travis Kelce rolled his ankle, his right foot, whatever the injury was, late in that opening half in Minnesota as well. And a lot of people pointed to the turf in Minneapolis and said that is the issue. I asked him if there is a big difference in injuries between grass and turf, and he had one of the best answers I have heard yet. Pretty much saying, Scott, the turf is stickier, which means the catastrophic, devastating season-long injuries are more likely to happen on turf because your cleats, your footing can get caught, leading to those ACL, Achilles injuries, a muscle tearing, something of the sort. But players almost prefer it because they can stop on a dime and cut and do all the agile things that lead to the athletic displays out there on the football field. Grass is better because it's not nearly as sticky. You tend to slide or slip more, which leads to a higher quantity of injuries at times, but it's generally a sprained ankle, a hurt knee, something you can come back from in a week, 2 or 3 weeks, not devastating season long. Overall, the course, the injuries are pretty even, Scott, in terms of the number on grass or on turf. It's just that overall, turf obviously has a higher impact on the sport because it can sideline some of the best players in the sport for longer durations of time. So I thought I'd just share that here, Scott, as Justin Jefferson was placed on the IR, and I thought Dr. Chow did a pretty good breakdown of kind of explaining the nuances of it all in a pretty cut and dry manner.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, right? It's the fight you have. Do you want more traction, more this and that? You know, even in cleats, you know, when you talk regular grass, the old days, you have the cleats. Why? Because you want better grip, right, on your feet. But then when you have that better grip and a better traction, as the doctor was referring to, that's when you get the major injuries because your feet are not giving out. They're intended not to give out. So you want to be able to make the cuts, as you mentioned. So, you know, where's the happy medium? Is there really a difference? You know, are there enough players that would rather have all grass, which you couldn't have, right? Because we have dome stadiums, you just can't have that anyway. But is there really a preference on all grass versus, you know, the AstroTurf, even though it's not AstroTurf, you know what it's called? But some of these, I will say this, you know, my local high school here in Plainview, they have one of those turf fields. I tell you, it's like walking on pillows. I mean, it really is comfortable. Now, traction aside, just from like, it's not the old days where you're running on cement with, you know, indoor-outdoor carpeting over it, right? That it's not. It is really, really forgiving, but you get that traction issue.
Yeah, listen, again, very limited experience. I was a backup high school quarterback. I'm not going to try to say I ever played at the level of anybody in the National Football League. But Scott, I fractured my right ankle during practice my junior year of football because we had a turf field where the pellets were pretty apparent, meaning the turf was a little bit stickier. In right. You know, my fault here. I But we were doing a fumble recovery drill. Yes, even the quarterbacks were involved in that, where the goal was to slide and how to fall on the football properly. God forbid it ever hit the turf. And my right ankle got caught under me and stuck in the turf. And sure enough, fractured my ankle and missed the final 8 weeks of our season. Again, I wasn't doing much out there anyway, but just my own personal anecdote for the stickiness that turf can present. So as we look at IR as well, Scott, there's a game actually on the radar that you mentioned, Rams and Cardinals, that maybe based on preseason win totals or even both teams having a losing record so far this year, that you wouldn't think would be that great. But the Arizona Cardinals have been a competitive side. The Rams have looked a lot better, Scott, than many people anticipated entering this year. They face off against each other on Sunday as a part of that afternoon slate. The Rams nearly a touchdown favorite, laying 6.5 against Arizona. And we mentioned the IR bug that seems to be going around today. James Conner, as Adam Schefter of ESPN is reporting as well, expected to miss multiple weeks with the knee injury he suffered Sunday against the Bengals. He had been great, Scott, for Arizona this year. He's now a candidate to be placed on the IR.
Yeah, that sucks, right? You know, because he was terrific, and he made that team competitive. You know, whether they would have won, you know, 6, 7, 8 games, I kind of doubt that. But at least they weren't the pushover that we all thought they were. So, yeah. You know, and also I'm trying to find teams, Ben, as we talked with Kirk Cousins about the trade deadline. You know, it's not like trading a pitcher or a power forward in the NBA or, you know, a center in hockey. You know, it's hard to trade the quarterback, and I know it's going to be talked about a lot. You know, the Cardinals, though, were one of those teams where I know Joshua Dobbs has looked okay, but just that. But if they showed some real competitiveness, you know, maybe the Cardinals would have been one of those teams. Maybe the Patriots, you know, I'll throw it out to you. I mean, I don't know if there's really a team out there when you really break it all down that if the Vikings said, you know what, Kirk Cousins is for sale, who wants a 4th-round draft choice? Go ahead, have him for the rest of the year. I don't know if you really could find a team that situates that. But the Cardinals, back to your original notion, you know, kind of would have been one of those if they would have found a way to get this win, and maybe Dobbs plays poorly and the Cardinals say, you know, we could really make something of this season. Why not?
Yep.
But
Arizona was a perfect 3-0 against the spread, Scott, the first 3 weeks, competitive with the Niners in the opening half before San Francisco pulled away, winning by 19, even covering as a 2-touchdown favorite. Of course, the Bengals, who are probably better than a 3-point favorite relative to Arizona, were only a 3-point favorite in the desert last week. They won by 2 touchdowns, covering there as well. It will be interesting, Scott. I think the timeline for Arizona to see what they do with Kyler Murray. Competitive is one thing. Winning football games to bring back the guy you paid a ton of money to is a different story. We'll see what that means for Kyler Murray. Scott, I guess another team you would have to naturally loop in here for a short-term rental of Kirk Cousins would be the New York Jets, right? They won their second game of the year on Sunday against Denver. The offense looks better right now. Zach Wilson, a costly interception at the end. It wasn't the performance he put up against the Chiefs, but Breece Hall is back. No pitch count, no snap count restrictions on Hall right now. If for some reason, Scott, the New York Jets, who host the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday afternoon, the Birds a 6.5-point road favorite in MetLife against New York, if for some reason, Scott, the Jets can either pull out the upset outright, but certainly if they're competitive in this football game, they might be the team at 2-4 you feel the best about around the National Football League. Maybe they're in the running for Kirk Cousins. Not entirely sure if it's worth it, having Zach Wilson there and the idea that Aaron Rodgers is going to be on his way back next year. At least that's what the party line is for Aaron at this moment. But I would think the Jets would be maybe that natural candidate other in other areas, Scott.
Yeah, kind of though, damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? If they lose to the Eagles, right, they fall to 2-4, and then, boy, you're really behind the eight ball, right, especially in that division. If you beat the Eagles and you go to 3-3 somehow or another, well, then you have to at least give props to Zach Wilson, right? He's got back-to-back wins, and he's played good then, theoretically, in 3 straight games, so why would you bring in another quarterback under those circumstances? And even if you did, you really would be just, that would be the end for Zach Wilson, right? So, it makes sense, but, you know, I don't know. How about the New England Patriots? That would be the one. You know, I think, you know, they might be done. The word out of New England is that Mac Jones is going to start again. Gosh. At least that's what Bill O'Brien said today. So, yeah. But the Patriots, you know, kind of, you know, this is Belichick, and he wants to, I don't doubt for a second he's hanging on because he wants to catch Don Shula for most wins. But he's about 30 away. But he would be a guy where, all right, if I could pick up 5-6 cheap wins bringing in a quarterback, okay, I might be able to do that, even though realistically I'm not going to make the postseason.
Scott, we're already at a point with how bad some teams are this year that we're having the Caleb Williams conversation, right? Who was minus 500 to be that first overall selection. Would a thing keeping Bill Belichick hanging on be the opportunity to draft the next face of the franchise in Foxborough? Potentially, right? You mentioned it at the start, Scott. We're talking about it, how the Green Bay Packers are now for the first time judging mediocre quarterback play. The Patriots are a disaster this year offensively, really the last 2 years offensively in the post-Tom Brady era. Could it be Caleb Williams to New England? It'd be a crazy thing to benefit the New England Patriots, but it's a part of the conversation. We'll have more up next on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are live here for a few more moments on FFC. Scott, there's a couple of games on the Sunday slate that are pretty intriguing. You mentioned this one, Scott, the Jaguars and the Colts, one of the two that we have that features two above 500 winning record teams. The Colts are 3-2. Jacksonville is 3-2. The Jags back from London, Scott, back-to-back Sundays, no bye week. Welcome back to Duval County. At least you're at home. Welcoming to Duval County is not something that has been conducive for the Colts, who have lost 8 straight against Jacksonville in Jacksonville. Their last win was back in the 2014 NFL season. Scott, the winner of this game is going to be in pole position in the AFC South. Jacksonville is a 4-point favorite.
Yeah, and be 4-2. 4-2. You know, listen, Jacksonville wouldn't be that big of a surprise, obviously. But for the Colts, you know, we got to figure out who's going to be a quarterback. Is Anthony Richardson going to be able to play with his bum shoulder? Is it going to be Gardner Minshew? Tough spot for Jacksonville. You know, being over in London 1 week is tough. Being over in London 2 weeks, you know, you really kind of get yourself, okay, here we are. You know, then you got to hop on a plane and fly back. These teams have the option. From what I read last year, they have the option of having a bye after they get back from Europe, and so far the teams have said no, they don't want the bye. So we'll see how that affects Jacksonville. Either the Jags laying only 4.5, though, you know, under normal circumstances, that would be a pretty strong play in my book. I got to see a little bit more out of the Colts. Not that much out of Jonathan Taylor. Really get 5-6 carries at most this past weekend with Zach Moss going off. So, but I like the Jags. Yeah.
I think 7 total touches, a reception in there as well for Jonathan Taylor. Again, you know, fresh off what they were calling an ankle injury that wasn't really an ankle injury, but got his contract, just getting him back in the fold. Of course, he signed that deal on Saturday. Jonathan Taylor back now for Indianapolis. I would expect Gardner Minshew to get the start for Indy. All right, that does it for us today on Football Full Circle. He's Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. We will talk to everybody tomorrow. Live right here on Sports Grid Radio, Sirius XM Channel 159, starting at noon Eastern Time tomorrow. Have a great Tuesday, everyone.